Well, guys, we didn't even get to the airport yet, and we have a huge aviation decision-making process to go through here. Medical issues are certainly in the news and are very, very relevant. Bob, where did this guy make his first mistake?
Well, I think as pilot in command, he allowed expectations to get a little bit ahead of the game here. His passengers are expecting to get home by Sunday night, and that's creating some pressure here. He should have been very clear on what the expectation should be, that these kinds of trips depend on weather, illness, capability of the pilot to perform under given circumstances, and it's got to be a we'll see. If everything goes well, we'll be back on Sunday night. If that's not acceptable, then other plans have to be made. And now he's at a decision point relative to his personal condition here as to whether he should make the trip. He's got some tough decisions to make.
Colds, allergies, I mean, they're a part of daily living. I mean, daily living. You know, they come and they go, and some are worse than others. But as aviators, it takes on a whole world of its own, doesn't it, Wally?
Well, it sure does. As you pointed out in your analysis, Bob, going to altitude does nothing to improve any of those symptoms, and it makes a lot of them worse. So we have a unique responsibility in that regard, I think, because we have the added responsibility of flying the airplane, which takes certain senses. And most of us with our non-medical background really don't understand how those medications will affect us.
And there's good news, bad news here. You know, prescription medications, we understand. You know, there's a process there that is pretty cut and dry. But with all the over-the-counter medications now, boy, I'll tell you, there's a lot out there that can get us in trouble, you know, very, very innocently. John, what do you think about that?
Well, very true. But I also think that for the most part, most people are not very good judges of their own ability, to be frank. We tend to overestimate our ability. There's no real quantitative measure of how much a cold is going to affect you. There's no real yardstick. There's nothing you can hold up against it to say, okay, it meets this certain level. It's more qualitative feel. And I think we're pretty poor judges of that. It may take someone, a third party, to look at you like a doc and say, no, you're not really capable or qualified to do this. And then you add the impact of the medications and what effect that's going to have on top of it. You're in a medically compromised position. You add some medications on top of that. We're just not equipped to be able to make that kind of decision.
You know, the downside is horrendous. If you have a cold and you say, well, am I going to go to work today? Well, you may decide to go to work, and it may be a real bad decision, and not only a bad day for you, but you can infect your coworkers, and, you know, that can be a slippery slope. But in the aviation context, we all know how challenging it is to fly an airplane. And do we really want to put ourselves in that state of making very, very important decisions with a diminished capacity? And as you said, John, making judgment calls about yourself is not something we do well. So involved in this process is our aviation medical examiner. Well, let's talk about the rapport that pilots have with their aviation medical examiner. Wally, a lot of divergence on that subject, isn't there?
Most pilots want to stay as far away from their aviation medical examiner as they can, except for that once or twice when they have to go back and get their physical. Pilots are very, very uncomfortable talking about illnesses and issues with their aviation medical examiner.
I agree with that, Wally.
So they tend to not want to discuss those things, and therefore we think we can diagnose ourselves and we think we can handle it. Back to what John said, we're certainly not experts in those drugs, but all you have to do is look on the box and it says may cause drowsiness, do not operate machinery. Well, I think flying an airplane IFR is operating machine, pretty sophisticated machinery. So we don't have to be too smart to read the box.
The whole process is complicated. You know, we like to simplify things. But, you know, you take something to get you a good night's sleep, and it will get you a good night's sleep. But it did nothing to improve or better your cold. And as a matter of fact, it probably set back the healing process that our body is trying to go through to rid ourselves of the cold. And here we are as literally novices in the medical realm, you know, making decisions that are very, very dangerous decisions when we put them in an aviation context.
Mm-hmm. There's really no cure for the common cold other than time. And these medications simply mask the symptoms.
And masking it can lead then to, as one of our choices was, that, well, let's just take off and see how it goes. And boy, is that going down a slippery slope. You know, you got an hour's worth of flight in good VFR conditions. And what's that going to do now when an hour into the flight you're going to turn around to your passengers and say, nah, I don't think we can go any further. I need to land.
That's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. No. And you're going to find yourself squeezed more and more and more into that box of making worse decisions as it goes along.
And as Wally said, climbing to altitude will do nothing to improve the situation.
And consider that you are incapacitated. So taking off, whether it's VFR or IFR, understandably IFR is more challenging. But you're violating the FAR if you take off with a known incapacitation.
Right. There's no differentiation in the FAR between type of operation. Whether it's a J3 or the space shuttle, it's the same medical certification required. Yep. There's no differentiation.
Fit to fly is fit to
fly. Exactly.
And one standard. I mean, either you're fit or you're not fit. Think about how many times we all have said, well, I don't feel just right, but I can do this. And when we get away with it, it kind of reinforces the fact that, okay, this did work.
You lowered the bar.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think if we're really honest, I think many, if not most pilots that read this scenario would be tempted, in reality, to do just that. Let's see how it goes. Okay? Yeah. And it's VFR. And you know what? If it's awful, I'll be smart enough to land. But once you take off, are you really going to land? And when you do land, are you better off or worse off? I mean, now you really have a complicated process. Right now, right here and now, on the ground, in the lobby of the hotel, what is the most important thing? The most important thing is getting everybody home safely. I mean, that's the only, should be our only goal.
Yep.
And there's only one way that you can guarantee that. You know, get in the car and head down the road. Compromising is just that. It is compromising. And it's a very dangerous compromise because of some of the really dangerous symptoms that are going to continue with this cold. As we said, colds don't go away in a day. They don't go away in 2 days. And are you ready to spend a week in State College, Pennsylvania until you're perfectly healed? Well, we know that's not the best solution.
You did that 20 years ago.
So you're really between a rock and a hard place. How many people are willing to leave an airplane on the road? And I've talked to a lot of people about this. Very few pilots choose that option.
That's a difficult decision.
Yeah.
But in this case, I think correct decision. Imagine what you're doing to your friends if you take them up in the airplane and then become incapacitated. Imagine what the position you've put them in then.
And let's just look upon this. You know, okay, you take off and, you know, you're not feeling good, feel yucky, but, you know, I can still fly the airplane. But now you're shooting an instrument approach at the end of a hard day, and you feel awful. I mean, what are your chances? Would you want to be along for the ride on that airplane?
No.
When whoever it is, I mean, you pick the best pilot you know, and now they're a mere shadow of their former self shooting an instrument approach at your destination. Terrible odds. And yet that's where choice three is going to take us. And once you get airborne, you're probably going to continue to destination because that's what we pilots do.
Mm-hmm. And drowsiness, vertigo, those kinds of things could be deadly. And those are types of things that can occur with this type of medication.
If you read NTSB accident reports, it's not uncommon to find that in the chemical analysis of the pilots, mm-hmm. they found over-the-counter meds of one kind or another. And they're often not considered the probable cause of the accident, but they're still a factor out there.
They are definitely.
Sometimes even prescription meds.
Yeah.
Not just over-the-counter.
Well, you're right. Sometimes prescription meds.
And it's all part of that, when we go back to the basics, that hazardous attitude.
Macho. I can take these meds, even though it says don't drive and don't operate machinery.
Right.
I'm a cool guy. I can do it.
The medication clears the symptom, but it just really just masks the symptom. Yeah. It's also part of that whole, as I like to call it, kind of that regulatory creep thing where, okay, I'm 80%, I'm 90%, I can manage to do this. It's the same thing with, well, I'm one day out of currency, or the airplane's only one day out of annual, or I'm only 20 pounds over gross weight, or I'll just go another 10 feet on the minimums. Or it's that whole pushing the edge kind of thing that just creeps and creeps.
Like it or not, the medical is part of the process that provides a safe operating environment for pilots. It is. And it really is a very, very important part of this piece, okay? So we talked about calling your AME. Okay, it's a Sunday, and we know that isn't going to work. But think about, you know, in an ideal world, you would do that. Is there an AME on the planet that is going to tell you to get in the airplane and fly home when you tell him that you're suffering the effects of a cold?
And you've taken these
meds. And you've taken over-the-counter medication. Not a one. Okay, so we're talking 100% probability of an expert telling you not to do it. But we, as pilots, judging ourselves, judging our own capabilities, I'm thinking in the real world, if this happened, 9 out of 10 pilots are going to get in the airplane and go fly.
Might even be higher than that.
Yeah.
If the AME said, no, you're grounded, which you saw in the Air Force and the military, right? There was no debate, no question about it. And we would take that probably a lot easier than our own self-evaluation and our own self-grounding.
And while we talk about the airlines, we talk about the military, and we know that the standards, they're very high standards, very demanding standards, but they have to be to achieve the mission and to bring about the level of safety, okay? In the military, you know, we would get, it's called DNIF, you know, duty not included flying. And you had to be cleared by a doctor before you could go out. Now, we don't require that, you know, the general aviation pilot go to an aviation medical examiner and get cleared, but that standard should still apply. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should be able to validate to yourself that you have no symptoms that will adversely affect your flight, that you are fit to fly.
That's part of the responsibility that we have as a pilot in command. And we owe that to the passengers that are with us to exercise that responsibility.
And it really doesn't make any difference, fit to fly, whether or not you even have a third-class medical. There's a whole new crop of aviators out there now with the LSAs, with the driver's license certification. They still have the same requirement to be fit to fly. Mm-hmm. You just don't have the piece of paper in your pocket, and you may have never even seen an AME for a couple of years. Doesn't make any difference. You're still not fit to fly, whether or not you have that paper.
Let's talk for a minute about, you know, the aviation medical examiner. They're about as popular as the FAA. I mean, nobody wants to go to them voluntarily, but they're a part of the system. Well, there are some wonderful aviation medical examiners out there. And just think about the plus side of associating with one of them, whether you go to them every 1 or 2, every 6 months, a year, or every 2 years, you have a chance to dialogue with an aviation professional to bring out the best in you. What do most pilots do? I'm not telling the AME nothing.
I've been blessed to have a good relationship with 2 or 3 good aviation medical examiners. In fact, they were usually pilots. And I've used that asset a number of times. When I've had a diagnosis from my regular doctor that says your blood pressure is a little high, I've called that AME and said, how should we handle this? What meds can I take? And I got their advice before I submitted myself for a medical exam with them, and I'm sure prevented some FAA problems. So I think the relationship is worth spending some time to cultivate.
Our clients are going to get the benefit of Dr. Mike Tiger's experience. Mike is a aviation medical examiner that we all know and have worked with for years. And Mike will give us some great insight. And Mike is a wonderful example of the kind of AME that we want to associate with, and they're out there. And establish a rapport with them so that when we have issues, and we're all going to have medical issues, I don't care whether they're big, small, or in between, there comes a time when you need expert advice. You know, your general practitioner cannot provide you the appropriate feedback. It is really up to us as the pilot to judge our condition and whether we're fit to fly. We need to have tough standards. Just as we have tough standards in our flying, we need to have tough standards on our fitness to fly so that we can make the tough decision and not set ourselves up to fail. This pilot should have never guaranteed his passengers that he was going to get them home on Sunday night. We just can't make that guarantee as pilots. But as soon as you do, you're setting yourself up for this scenario, mm-hmm. and making a tough decision even tougher.